You are listening to Confetti, the wedding planning business talk show on ConfettiRadio.com. Con what? Confetti. Con what? Confetti. Con what? Confetti. Fettuccine? Linguini. Spaghetti? Confetti.
Hello, happy Tuesday. You're listening to episode 323 of Confetti, the wedding planning business talk show. My name is Debbie Quain. Thank you for joining me. I am broadcasting today live from the Washington, D.C. area. It's Tuesday, October 9th. Did I say that? This show is broadcast live on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you'd like to get show notes, schedules, information about past shows, everything you need to know about Confetti is on the ConfettiRadio.com website, ConfettiRadio.com. If you'd like to get a text message when the show is about to go live, the number, and I have a new number, some switching around to do, you can text the word Confetti, which is C-O-N like November, F like Frank, E-T-T-I, to the number 71441. Had to make a change there. If you texted the word confetti to the other number, which I'm not going to confuse you by repeating, your information transferred over. So no need to sign up again. And you can give it a go. You'll probably get a message saying you're already signed up. So to get text messages, if you're here in the United States, text the word confetti, the show name, confetti, to 71441. And when the show is about to go live, you will get a text message. Standard message and data rates apply. However, the text is actually a free text on this end. So the last show we did last week, we talked about wedding reception traditions. Thank you for all of your comments and your feedback. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. It really helps me to determine what we need to talk about next and feedback, what worked, what didn't. So each show is broadcast live, but you can always listen to the replay whenever it's convenient for you, either on ConfettiRadio.com. Today's show is 323, so ConfettiRadio.com/323. Or you can go on to BlogTalkRadio.com/Confetti, get the replay there. The show is also on iTunes, so look for Confetti Radio on iTunes. We're on Stitcher Smart Radio also, so you can go there and listen to your heart's content, okay? But just go onto ConfettiRadio.com and select the Listen tab or How to Listen, and you'll see all the different options that you have. The idea behind the live stream is that, well, the live show, is just so it's the feedback I get, and I feel like I'm not doing this alone, and it helps for me to have the feedback because I know in our industry we have a lot of questions and comments, and I don't know everything. So it's helpful when everybody gets involved. So I love that aspect. I hope you do too. So Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern is where you can catch the live broadcast, assuming Debbie doesn't fall in a manhole. Okay, and I feel like I know so many of you, although I've never met any of you personally, and I hope you feel the same way with regards to me. So hopefully we can connect. Did anybody go to Wedding MBA last week? It was on my list to go. I didn't go. I'm curious to hear if anybody went and what the feedback was. I've seen a lot of different comments and on Twitter and just online about the event. And by all accounts, there's a lot of information, a lot of networking. And I even saw the special that, you know, if you decide to sign up now, you can, you know, pay for next year's event at a super low cost, like $159 or $169, which is really good. So if you went to Wedding MBA, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. But let's make a pact to try to go next year, God willing, right? Because I'm going to seriously make a much bigger effort to get more involved in industry events because I realize this is how we learn and this is how we grow. Okay, so for tonight's show, we're continuing with our Do You Know Weddings. I have to say Do You Know because I kept saying No Weddings and it sounded like I was saying N-O, like, No Weddings. I meant Do You Know Weddings. And the idea for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about is that as wedding planners, we should have a basic knowledge base of what happens at a wedding. You know, forget planning, just what happens at a wedding. So my goal is just to sort of tackle different subjects through the remainder of 2012. So last week we talked about wedding reception traditions. Today we're just going to talk about the wedding cake, which is a big symbol for weddings. Usually wedding dress, wedding cake, those are things that we associate with weddings. So we're just going to go over some basics and some need-to-know stuff. It may be too elementary for some of us experienced planners, but I think it's a good thing. It's a good way for us to brush up on our skills. Let's see. I'm looking at the chat room. Hi, Kamara saying, I haven't attended a wedding MBA, but plan to attend the Association of Bridal Consultants Business of Brides Conference in November. Don is saying, oh, hi, Don. And you say you're going to wedding MBA next year. Seriously. Okay. Yeah, good. We need to sort of get together because I really want to put faces to names. So I was thinking I wanted to sort of do a few meetups around and meet some of you. But an industry event makes perfect sense. Maybe we can sort of get together and have a few kumbaya sessions. Okay, so getting back to wedding cakes. Big iconic symbol. Do I need to say big iconic? If it's iconic, it's already sort of big, right? An iconic symbol of weddings. And most of your clients will want a wedding cake, and their wedding guests for sure will expect to see a wedding cake. So no stranger to most of us, but let's just go over some of the stuff that we need to know. Just to give you a little bit of history lesson, you know, I can't resist. Do you know, I actually didn't like history in school. It's only in the last 10 years or so of my life that I've really become fascinated about what happened in our past and how we got to where we are, especially when it comes to weddings. So Queen Victoria of England was actually one of the first, I don't know if she was the first, but one of the first highly publicized weddings where there was a tiered cake, you know, a stacked cake. And apparently this wedding cake that Queen Victoria had was a whopping 300 pounds. Can you imagine? 300 pounds. And by all accounts, it was not the best tasting cake. You know, I'm old, but I wasn't there to tell you personally. But I hear it wasn't the best tasting wedding cake. And that's because it was baked so far in advance because it took so long back then for them to decorate the cake. So, as you might imagine, not great. It looked great to look at. Tasting, not so much. So, and that was sort of the catalyst that got the white, the tiered cake, the white cake moving forward. Because, you know, prior to that, I think the cake was called, at least in England, it was called plum cake. And if you are a Wedding Business Guide member, and I know several of you are, and shout out to those of you who are part of the Wedding Business Guide community. If you just do a search for wedding cakes, you'll find out there's a lot of information on site about that. Some of the details that we're covering today, of course, but a lot more information. So that was sort of the thing that got everything going with wedding cakes. And then, you know, developments like sugar production and things like that just made it easier and made more sense for people to have these big fancy cakes. So the modern day cake that we come to know comes in all shapes and sizes, but typically it's a cake that's tiered. So it's either stacked, meaning, you know, you've got a smaller cake on the top and then gradually gets larger and larger. So the cakes are either sitting one on top of the other, or they're stacked, meaning they're separated by columns, or so there's sort of like a space. I'm sort of doing this on screen for those of you that can see it. I'm not doing a very good job. But just sort of stacked cake. So we all know what a traditional wedding cake looks like. But don't let a wedding cake fool you. There really is a whole lot of engineering that goes on to putting a wedding cake together. You know, there are actually dowels, either plastic or wooden dowels that are inside each of those layers of cakes. And then there's usually a circle that's on top of each cake. Remember I said it's stacked, and that's to prevent the top tier from quickly becoming the bottom tier. So I say that to say, don't think this is a small undertaking. You will and may have already come across somebody who wants to make the wedding cake. Make sure this person understands the engineering that goes in to making a cake. It really is a big deal for a traditional looking cake. And it's one thing that I believe that you really should seek a professional to get their help with that. Your clients, again, may have family or friend that wants to do this. And if that's what they do for a profession, it makes perfect sense because it's coming from a place of love. But it is no small feat to bake, decorate, and assemble a wedding cake. Of course, it doesn't have to be a cake. Some weddings, I'm seeing pies. I'm hearing people don't want cake at their wedding. cupcakes. Those of you that have heard me say this many times, I'm just in love with cupcakes. And I'm almost always try to push the idea of cupcakes onto my clients. But that's a personal choice. But cupcakes have just sort of gone front and center, right? It's just crazy how they have become so popular. So weddings are no exception. Having cupcakes is something that a lot of brides and grooms want now. And sometimes it's not even one huge cake. In some instances, you may go to a wedding or see of a wedding, or your client may want a wedding where there's an individual cake for each of the table at the reception. That's a really nice sort of touch. So each table has its own cake. So lots of different ways to do the wedding cake. But today I really want to focus on what we know traditionally as the wedding cake, which is the tiered cake. And I'm saying tiered, T-I-E-R-E-D. With my weird speech. Okay. Dawn is saying, yes, I took a Wilton's cake decorating class. Good to have this under your belt for those last minute mishaps. And the class is affordable. Yeah, that's a really great point, Dawn. I mean, we shouldn't be trying to do everything ourselves, but you can only benefit by taking classes like that. And if it's affordable, like Dawn says, take a cake decorating class. You know, even if it's just for the knowledge base to understand what goes on in constructing something like that, you'll have a better appreciation of how things work. It can only help for you, only help to propel you in this industry. So let's talk a little bit about the lingo, some of the terms and what you might hear when you're talking about your wedding cake, because again, as a professional wedding planner, you want to be able to have a relatively, sensible, knowledgeable conversation with your professionals, in this case, the cake person, the cake maker, cake baker. Here in the United States, most wedding cakes are covered with one of two types of icings, either buttercream or fondant. I say fondant. I watched that cake show and that guy says fondant. I don't know. That's how you're supposed to say it. I always say fondant. So that's what I'm talking about. Fondant. I'm going to say fondant. And let's talk about buttercream. Buttercream, as the name suggests, is made of real butter, sugar, and eggs. What does that tell you? Buttercream, I think, is absolutely delicious. The real butter, the sugar, it's light, it's fluffy, very popular. But it can and will melt, okay? Buttercream is popular, but it can and will melt. So what I mean by that is this is not the cake for a hot environment, or if summer months. This is something you've got to really think about. And your clients may have their hearts set on buttercream for their wedding cake. You need to keep in mind the temperature of where this cake is going to be. Because for the most part, a wedding cake is displayed throughout the entire period of time for the wedding reception. In some instances, I see this more on movies than anything else. They sort of roll out the wedding cake during the assigned time of the wedding reception. But for the most part, the wedding cake is there for the entire duration of the reception. That's several hours. So hot temperature, buttercream cake, 3 hours, not a good mix. So you want to keep that in mind. Remember I said fondant is the other type of icing, and I'm going to talk about that in just a second. If you're comparing buttercream and fondant, buttercream is actually less expensive. Okay? So if you've got a budget-conscious couple, and they're, you know, the cake is something that they definitely is a big deal for them, just, you know, let them know buttercream is actually going to be less expensive than fondant. And, you know, it's easy, buttercream is easy to flavor, and there are lots of styles that look just as good as a fondant cake, and I'll explain, you know, the differences with fondant in just a second. So buttercream tastes great, not too expensive, relatively speaking, when you compare it with fondant, not good for the heat, okay? That's what we need to know as wedding planners. I'm jumping into the chat again, and you guys are talking about taking classes. Reggie's saying, every time I go to Michael's, I have the urge to buy the cake decorating books and supplies. Me too. I have a whole range of them on my shelf. And I think the most cake I've made, twice I made a cake from scratch. But, you know, I'm usually doing something. My decisions usually spur of the moment. So I'll go ahead and grab cake mix, which, you know, for the most part doesn't taste too bad. But, Yeah, I buy the books too. But, you know, Reggie, instead of buying a book, sign up and take a class. Like Dawn said, they're usually pretty affordable. Angela's asking Reggie, Angela, I know you're not speaking to me, but I'm jumping in. Have you seen the cricket cake? I think that's what you said. You said circuit, but I think you meant the cricket. It's great for the DIY bride. Cricut, which I have one, is C-R-I-C-U-T, which is sort of like a die-cutting machine. And if we're talking about the same thing, Angela, so Cricut came out with this thing that you can use, and it cuts the fondant, which is what I'm about to get into if I would just stop jumping into the chat and going off course. So it's a really great, it's something that I saw when it first came out a couple of years ago, and I thought I should have it. I didn't get it, but I'm sure that's what you're talking about. It really is a great piece of equipment by all the demos that I've seen, and it's as Angela says, it's really great for the DIY bride. Okay, I'm turning away from the chat and get back on topic. Okay, talked about buttercream. Let's talk about fondant. Fondant is the other popular type of icing for cakes and for cakes here in the United States. Okay, when you see a picture perfect cake in magazines and so forth and books, usually fondant is the culprit. It's the secret sauce behind those smooth cakes. It sort of looks like Play-Doh. It has that kind of consistency. It has a velvet tight sort of finish. And fondant is made out of sugar, corn syrup, and gelatin. And that's what, sort of has that Play-Doh consistency. And it just makes for a very smooth cake. The downside, one of the downsides with fondant is that the taste is just so-so. It is very sweet. It's very sweet. So the cake will look wonderful, but it probably isn't going to taste as good as a buttercream cake. Although there is sort of a way around that. Some cake bakers will put buttercream below and then cover the cake with fondant. So that's sort of a way around it. But more times than not, the fondant cake is not going to taste as good as a buttercream cake. But, nevertheless, it's very popular. Fondant, though, is famously difficult to work with. It takes much longer to apply. And those of you that have access to Wedding Business Guide, you can go in there. You'll see. It's sort of it's a lengthy process. So because it is famously difficult to work with, it costs more. So this is where, again, if your clients are talking about budget and they want that perfect cake, they want that cake that looks like it just came straight out of a magazine, that smooth appearance, just remember fondant is going to cost more. Okay, so unless your clients want a cake that's architecturally complex, I would suggest, skipping the fondant and going with buttercream. Again, it's their decision to make, but as professionals, we want to make sure that we guide them in the right direction. Okay, so fondant, buttercream, they've got their pros and their cons. All right? Okay, so for those of you just joining, welcome. You're listening to Confetti Radio. My name is Debbie. And hi, Martha. I see you there in the chat. And we're talking about wedding cakes. We're talking about what we need to know as wedding planners with regard to wedding cakes. So buttercream fondant, those are the top two here in the United States. There are others. For example, royal icing. And this is, you may have seen this. Royal icing is made out of confectioner's sugar and egg whites. It sort of has that meringue type of finish. It dries very hard, very quickly. I know this is a very popular finish in the United Kingdom. I know that personally. And if you've ever seen sort of those white cakes that have sort of the swirls and the lattice work on there, usually it's royal icing that's the culprit. And it's piped through an icing bag and can create some very intricate designs. But again, it dries very hard, very quickly. So you sort of have to work fast with that. When I'm talking about hard, I'm talking about seriously hard with royal icing. And sort of when you bite into it, it'll melt because, again, it's sugar at some point. But with the egg whites and the sugar it hardens very quickly. And it's egg whites, it's almost a perfect white. Another popular finish in Europe is marzipan, which is basically almond paste. And marzipan, which I detest, I hate it, is made out of sugar, eggs, and crushed almonds. And again, very popular in Europe. It looks like, it looks almost like fondant. It's rolled out into thin sheets. It's sort of like a light golden color, and it's rolled out into sheets and then placed over the cake. And it's marzipan is not the final part of the cake. Usually marzipan goes on the cake, and then the cake is iced. Again, very popular in Europe. I don't know, anyone over here in the United States has planned a wedding or been to a wedding or had a marzipan cake for their wedding? It's not that popular from my understanding. I don't see it as much as the buttercream and the fondant. So, and if you've ever seen the fruits design when they have like miniature fruits on cakes, a lot of times marzipan is the ingredient that they've used to create that. Reggie's saying she doesn't love it either. Yeah, I don't like marzipan. I guess it's an acquired taste. I don't like it at all. I'm screwing up my face. You tell me I have a poker face. Okay, another topping that I love, which Debbie loves, is, I'm talking about myself in third person, is whipped cream. It's not as sweet as buttercream, and I don't think I have to explain what whipped cream is. It's that fluffy, white finish, but it's not very sweet. So whipped cream goes very well if you have a cake that has a very sweet filling or fruit filling. Whipped cream is a really good combination. The thing with whipped cream, though, is it has to be refrigerated until the very, very last minute. Okay? So again, heat is not the friend with whipped cream. This has to come out, do its thing, and then go right back in the refrigerator. It's just not going to last. So not always practical for weddings in warmer climates. Okay? So buttercream fondant, royal icing, marzipan, and whipped cream. Those are the ones that are the big players. There are lots of other things and parts about making when it comes to cakes, but I just wanted you to be familiar with those because those are the terms that you're probably going to hear when you're talking to someone who is making a cake for your client. Okay? And just remember again, most cakes usually are tiered, so they're stacked. And either they're stacked, when I say stacked, they're sitting one on top of the other, or they're separated by some sort of device, usually a column of some sort. But again, don't underestimate the complexity involved in constructing a wedding cake. So be very careful when someone who doesn't do this for a living, who isn't a professional cake maker / decorator, wants to jump in and decorate the cake. Okay? Martha, you're saying you can't hear anything? Oh, okay. Blog Talk Radio, I know folks are on the phone. You should be able to hear me. I'm not getting that indication from anyone else. Let me just type in the chat here. Okay. So now that we've got some of the basics figured out with regard to the wedding cake, when you start researching your cake makers, and again, when you're working with vendors, you want to try and make it so that the first meeting is not the meeting with your client. You hopefully are meeting vendors beforehand. Remember, this is something that's ongoing. You want to go out there and talk to vendors so that when someone comes along and wants you to plan their wedding, you have a list of resources already. Granted, the resources that you have may not be the perfect match for your clients, but you should have a list, a starting point. Because remember, every good vendor you find, you should be asking that vendor for his or her suggestions for other vendors. It's a very small world in wedding planning when you're talking about it on a local level. Most people know who the other the major players are. So you want to make sure that you keep... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm distracted. Oh, Blog Talk Radio has crashed? Really? So no one can hear me on Blog Talk Radio. Wow, that's not good. Well, I'm recording it locally. I'm going to keep going. If you're hearing me on live stream, that means Blog Talk Radio is having issues. Yeah, it looks like something's going on with Blog Talk Radio. From my switchboard, it looks like everything is okay. So I hope everyone on the phone, I'm guessing everyone on the phone can hear me because they're still on the phone. Okay, I'm going to keep going, and let me just tell folks to go to live stream, confettilive.com. Also, if you go to Confetti Radio on Facebook, I think you can pick up the live stream there, too. All right, I'm just typing in here. Why do we always mistype when the pressure is on? Okay. Where were we? Where was I? Okay, so when you meet with the cake person, remember, the wedding cake is a big deal. And ideally, the wedding cake should be ordered about 6 months before the wedding, if possible. I say if possible because a lot of times your clients may come to you when there isn't that much of a window left. 6 months is a good time because, especially if the cake maker is a popular person, and it's a good chance that he or she is if you know them, right? Because we only make friends with really good people who are good at what they do. 6 months is really a good lead time for your clients to do that. But hopefully, I would suggest that they've made some decisions with their wedding colors and their style. That they need to know the location. These things should be secured, and of course the date. If they've got the location, they've got the date. You want to have those things in place before your clients go see the cake person, okay? But when you go to meet the cake person, you want to make sure that the cake person is following the local health requirements. If they're in a commercial space or retail location, there's a good chance that's already happening. However, if someone's operating out of their home, you want to double check that they are following local health requirements. I would not suggest, no matter how great that cake may have been that you tasted, if someone is not licensed to prepare food for resale in your area, that's not the person to suggest to your clients. I don't think it's worth the risk. And that maybe that's just because I'm anal. But again, this is a choice for you to make with you and your client. Just be very careful and make sure that this person is okay to, you know, prepare food, in this cake, to bake for your clients. So they got to follow the local health requirements. They must have excellent references. And ask for them and please check them. How many times do we ask for references but we don't go through the trouble of following up? Please, as wedding planners, we've got to check references because we are only as good as our worst vendor. Ultimately, your client gets to pick who they want to work with. But when you recommend someone, if that person falls through, it will come back and to haunt you. So please make sure that you're checking the references of the vendors that you are suggesting to your clients. More times than not, the vendors will provide you with a list of people that are willing to provide their references. You can still ask them, do you have, maybe can I speak to the last two people that you worked with? And then that way you sort of get a chance to handpick who you want to talk to, as opposed to them determining who you should speak to. You know what I mean? And just ask to see their reaction. It may not be a big deal, but also take into account what other vendors know about this person. And just because they're an unknown doesn't mean they're not a good vendor. It just strengthens your confidence in recommending them to your clients when other people can say good things about them. Okay? You also want to find out from the cake person with regard to what they're providing. Does it include delivery and setup? And this is very important. You don't want to mess with a wedding cake. You don't want to mess with a wedding cake once it's assembled, much less to bring it from point A to point B. I'm not doing it. Even if it's a sheet cake, I always have nightmares. I don't know where to put it in the car, you know, to make sure that it arrives in one piece. Someone who prepares and makes cakes for a living should know exactly how to get it from point A to point B and assemble it. So make sure you find that out. You don't want to do the pickup and transportation of a wedding cake unless it's a very simple basic cake. And even then, again, just pay for them to deliver and assemble it already. And your cake person should be willing to arrange for a cake tasting. Your clients should want to taste how great this wedding cake is going to be. Looking great is one thing. Nobody wants a cake that tastes like crap, right? So make sure a tasting should be involved. Now, this may not happen until after there's been some sort of agreement or some commitment on your client's part, but they should taste the cakes. And speaking of cake tastings, there's just going to be a laundry list of combinations. Because remember, we talked about icing, but the cake itself. And most brides will go with either a white cake or a yellow cake, or chocolate. But there are tons of other flavors, and that I'm just talking about cake. And then, remember we've got the stacked cakes. A lot of times, it's not just one cake in there; it's layers of cakes that are sandwiched together. So then you've got the cake flavor, and now you've got to choose the filling, or your client's got to choose the filling, right? So you've got cake flavor, you know, chocolate, vanilla, you know, red velvet, and then what filling are we going to use to sandwich those cakes together? And then a lot of your clients will want different flavors for each tier. So be prepared. be prepared. And a lot of times, as we know in life, when we are faced with so many options, it can become confusing. We're overwhelmed. So if you can sort of narrow down with your clients ahead of time what flavors they like, what flavors they don't like, and then you can sort of say to the cake person, well, the groom likes this or the bride likes that. They really don't want you to be bothered with this flavor. That will help, and that will definitely, definitely speed up the process when it comes to meeting, and not just speed up the process, but just make the process a whole lot easier for them to make a decision when they're picking out their cake. So remember, as wedding planners, we sort of want to be efficient and sort of move things along. And remember, your time is valuable. If you can make your meeting with the cake person an hour and a half as opposed to 3 hours, really, that's what you should be doing, because you should be compensated for your time. And keeping track of these visits, each vendor visit, no matter if it's cake person, florist, keep track of the time involved for you to get there and the time you're spending with the vendors. As engaging and as much fun as it may be, you're a professional, and keep that in mind. You don't want to keep dragging it out. I'm not saying you want to shortchange them by cutting their meeting short, but just sort of doing some fact-finding ahead of time will benefit you and will benefit them. And you'll just come out looking, you know, like the professional you are. Okay? So be ready for a long list of flavor and filling options. And your clients can mix and match if they choose, but there's nothing wrong with them having the same flavor for all three or all four tiers, no matter how, regardless, you know, or whatever number of tiers that they have for their cake. The information you should be prepared to give the cake person is the wedding date, of course. They need to know the reception site and the reception location and the number of guests that are attending the wedding. Any photos or clippings or ideas that your client has, they should be, the cake person should be presented with that. And of course, the style of the wedding, you know, the vibe that your clients want for their wedding. Very important. Whether it's modern and clean or whether it's whimsical. You may have seen those topsy-turvy cakes. Those are my next favorite after cupcakes. I love the topsy-turvy cakes. Or do they want something very traditional? Do they want flowers on the cake? These are the things that you want to find out and be prepared to share with your cake person. Some things with regard to the reception location. You want to make sure that you know the ceiling height for the reception site, and share that with the cake person, because this will determine how elaborate and the style of the cake, but also with regard to them maneuvering the logistics of the room. So ceiling height, the size, how far away is the reception room from the entrance to the building? Are there stairs? Do they have to go up elevators? Because remember, we're talking about a wedding cake here with several different parts. So you want to make sure that you explain to the cake person, and they may well ask you this, but in case they don't, you make sure you explain the logistics of how that cake needs to get to its final resting place, but the cake table where it ultimately will be. The number of guests for the wedding does not necessarily equal the number of servings for the cake. And I'll talk about the servings in a second. Typically, a good rule of thumb is 75% of the guest list. So I'll use nice round numbers. If your client is having 100 guests, then a wedding cake that will serve about 75 is probably a good estimate, because not everybody is probably going to eat cake. Now, if your clients say, oh yeah, everyone's going to eat cake and people are going to want seconds and we want to make sure there's enough, then so be it. But typically, I found 75% of the guest list is a good gauge for the number of servings. But you can talk to the cake person. We are expecting 150 guests. What do you think? Do we really need 150 servings? And the answer more times than not should be no. But talk to that individual, the cake person, the professional. Let him or her guide you with regard to that, okay? Martha is saying, thank you for saying that. I had a bride, a mom, asking me if I was willing to transport the cake from the vendor to the venue. But I was glad I rejected, precisely for that very reason. Yeah, Martha, it's no joke with the wedding cake. It's no joke with the wedding cake. Let the photographer do what he or she does. Let the DJ or band do what they do. Let the cake person do what they do. And that's not just making the cake and decorating the cake, but transporting that cake. You don't want the disaster. And I mean, it could happen, but with the cake person, but less likely so, because this is what they do. Just want to talk about pricing for a moment. Typically, wedding cakes are priced by the slice or by the serving. So based on the number of, I mean, it makes sense. Based on the number of servings will determine the cost of the cake. Not always, though. There are some cakes makers that will just charge by the cake. Not usually so, because the serving determines the ingredients and the portions, which ultimately affect the cost. Remember again, if you are working with budget conscious brides, that fondant is more expensive, traditionally more expensive than buttercream. Okay? Things like sugar flowers, delivery and setup may be extra, but you know, paying for delivery and setup is well worth the cost. That's not something that you should skimp on. With regard to pricing, some reception sites, venues will charge your clients a cake cutting fee. And let me tell you what that's about. Usually, and they'll tell you, you know, it's for use of their plates and their forks, but usually what it is, is if that reception site can provide the wedding cake, but your clients decide not to purchase their wedding cake, the way they sort of come back at them is by charging the cake cutting fee. It's really just punishment for not getting their cake. That's really what it is. And they will tell you it's for their forks and plates. Okay, yeah. But really, it's because they are now, you've brought a brand X cake into their facility, and that's sort of their way of making up for that. Do what you can as a wedding planner to negotiate that fee, i.e. eliminate it for your clients. It's not really a big deal for when, you know, for the wedding venue, because it's not really plates and forks. I mean, what if it's, you say I'm bringing in my own plates and forks. I mean, you're not going to do that, but see if you can negotiate your way around that. Try to get away from that, because they may charge something like $1 per serving, and that can add up. Again, it may not be, this is good for your budget, not just for your budget conscious brides. I just think for principle that we should try to sort of get away from that. Angel saying, for those venues use cupcakes. Good girl. Isn't that the answer? So there's another reason to have cupcakes. The venue cannot charge you the cake cutting fee, but they may sort of, again, they may use the angle of, you know, their plates and their forks, but I like that. I like that. So try to get away from the cake cutting fee if you can. Okay. I see someone made the comment in the chat. I think it was Dawn. Yeah. The size of the cake table is very important. So I sort of have that in my notes for the roundup, but I'll mention it now. You want to ask the cake person, what will the cake arrive on? What platform will it be on? Is it coming on a tray? Is it coming on a base? So that you can, number one, estimate the size of the table that this cake is going on, but you also need to know, you know, what is it? What's the appearance? Is it going to be sitting on a base? Is it going to be elevated off the table? These are things that you need to know, but very important for you to know the size of the cake table, the size of the cake, so that you can place the cake on an appropriate cake table. Ideally, there should be space around the cake. Like, the cake shouldn't be at the edge of the table. You need enough space around that, so the cake can really be in all its glory. Let's talk a little bit about the cake cutting ceremony. I touched on this when we talked about receptions last week, okay? Traditionally, the cake cutting happens about an hour before the end of the reception. And most wedding guests are going to expect the cake to be cut. There are certain things we just associate with weddings. And the wedding cake and the bride and groom or the couple cutting the cake is something that we associate with weddings. So traditionally, an hour before the end, but it doesn't have to be. Your clients can determine whenever they want that to happen. Just make sure that either you and or your staff is close by for the cake cutting ceremony. It's sort of its own little ceremony within the reception. Basically, you want to guide your clients and explain to them what they need to do. And this is a good thing to mention to them during their last meeting, the last face-to-face meeting before the wedding. And it's just very simple. The bride picks up before we do that, you want to make sure on your timeline that you list when the cake cutting is going to happen and that the DJ or the band, whoever's providing the music, knows when the cake cutting is going to happen. And, you know, you can either announce it, or a good way to sort of announce it without announcing it is to play the first dance song. So if the couple's already danced their first dance, which they probably have, you can play it again for the cake cutting. This is a great way to let music sort of set the tone, and it sort of is an indicator, ooh, something's about to happen. They're playing the first song again. So make a point of noting on the timetable, on your schedule, on your production day schedule, when the cake is going to be cut. So the music transitions and, you know, the bride and groom or your couple go up to the cake table and basically the bride picks up the knife, okay? The groom then places his right hand over the bride's and together they're going to make two cuts in the bottom layer at the back of the cake. So the side closest to them. Two cuts, one, two, to create the slice. They place the slice of cake on the plate, and then they feed one another from the single slice. That's all. Groom feeds the bride, then the bride feeds the groom, and then they kiss. That's really all that's involved. I've oversimplified it there, but that's basically what needs to happen. I've seen some situations where the bride and the groom sort of do this, for those of you on camera, where they try to feed each other at the same time. That may work, but I think it's just as easy for, you know, the cake is on the plate. One person feeds the other person. Yum. Next person feeds the other person. Yum. Kiss. Mwah. And it's over. Really, that's all there is to it. I'm hoping that we can all hold our hands up and make a pact as wedding planners. We talked about the garter last week. Please, let's make a pact that we are going to encourage each of our clients not to smush cake in each other's face. Can we please make a pact? Please. I mean, most times, it's funny, but usually someone, and it's usually the bride, is not too happy about it. Maybe she'll do the first smush, and then he'll make the next smush. Again, I just think a wedding is such a special occasion that I don't like the smushing of the cake. So, you know, again, we don't want to always put our own ideals on our clients, but, you know, there's nothing like a bride being upset with her groom on her wedding day. So, and that gown probably cost a pretty penny. So think twice about the smushing and trying to dissuade them from doing that. Dawn is saying, I like to cut the cake immediately after dinner. Don't wait too late. Guests will leave and they're left with tons of cake. That's a good point, Dawn. I found, though, did you hear the way I said that? That's a good point, Dawn. You knew I was coming with something else, right? a lot of guests won't leave or won't think that it's right to leave before the cake is cut. But you're right. Don't leave it too late. And I said usually an hour before. So most wedding receptions I found are 3 hours long, sometimes four. So if by the third hour on a four-hour reception, they've cut the cake, I don't think that's too late. But absolutely, if you want to do that sooner, do that. And that just sort of leaves time for all the other festivities to happen. Your clients may want to have, if it's a sit-down dinner, I mentioned this last week, the cake cutting may actually happen right before dessert is served, because sometimes the wedding cake is the dessert, right? So you make that call, just discuss it with your clients and plot it out. Wedding reception, we should be detailing what happens, you know, at least on the quarter of an hour. This is happening. And cake cutting should be part of that. But a lot of guests expect to see it. It's a great photo opportunity. So make sure the photographer knows when it's about to happen. The band know when the band or the DJ knows when it's going to happen. And make sure the catering staff, either the maitre d', the banquet person, whoever that contact person is for the food service, knows when the cake is going to be cut. Okay. And then once they've cut the cake, you know, they've fed one another, they've kissed, they've gotten all the photos, have the band or the DJ go into an upbeat song. Okay. Because what can happen is that first song is usually kind of a slow romantic song and I'm here rocking as though I can hear music, but transitioning it into going into something that's more upbeat signals, okay, this portion is over. We're going into something else. And then people can either dance or they can sort of move around. Remember, music is really an important indicator of change. So I would suggest just switching, turning, changing the pace. And it sort of just gets people moving and they're ready for the next thing. Because we don't want to labor and drag out a wedding reception that just sort of goes on and on. It doesn't seem like it's coordinated. When things happen we as wedding planners work hard to get that flow of things, it really makes for a nice reception. The wedding guests and your clients may not know what's going on, but they'll just know it was a great wedding. Okay? So think about doing that. I found that works out really well just to sort of change the music right after that they've cut the cake. And they can still be taking pictures. That's fine. But it just sort of signals something else is about to happen. Kiki's saying, can we discuss how they are supposed to hold hands? I know of two different ways. Does it matter? Sure, Kiki. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, are you going to, type in the chat. I mean, for me, are we talking about the way that they cut the cake? Because I mean, traditionally, the bride holds the knife. And for those of you that are watching, where's my letter opener? I don't want to do anything on video because those listening and can't see won't benefit. So the bride holds the cake, holds the knife, right? And then the groom, it would be her right, this would be her right hand, right? And then, can you see? Then he takes his right hand, imagine the two right hands, over the knife. And then they sort of just go in the back of the cake, the bottom layer, hopefully it's not a fake cake layer, we'll talk about that. Cut one, and then cut two, like a triangle, and then they just move the cake onto the plate. So what other, tell me some other ways of cutting the cake. Let me hear. Maybe it's so obvious that I'm missing it. But yeah, I'd love to hear a different way. And your clients may have some different ideas, or you may know of a different idea. Please fill me in. I'd love to know. And speaking of the cake, cutting the cake, make sure on your timeline, on your production day schedule, that you or your staff, whoever's responsible for that, make sure there's a cake plate. Make sure that the knife is there to cut the cake. And make sure there's a fork. Usually there's a special cake knife that your clients have. So, you know, make sure that's in place. But at least, make sure there's a plate, a cake plate, and a fork. Could be two forks, but one fork will actually do. Make sure that's in place. You don't want to be scrambling for that and running for that after they cut the cake. Dawn is saying, should they always cut the bottom layer? I guess not, but for me, it just makes the most sense to start with the bottom layer because it's the closest to the table. I just think it's just easier to take that. I'm still mimicking and doing movements like you guys can see me to just move it onto the plate. That's what's traditionally done. It doesn't have to be, but that's what I always do. Reggie's saying, I guess because one may be left-handed, Kiki, they will automatically do what makes sense to them. Yeah, and it'll depend on, you know, on their setup. I'm a right-handed person. And but if they're lefty, it might be left. You know what I mean? So and maybe it's two different hands. Maybe her left, his right. Just so long as it's together and it sort of looks it's coordinated. And the thing is, just have that discussion before the wedding. Yeah? So that everybody's comfortable. Put that on your list of things to talk about during the last meeting. It may sound anal, but remember, our clients want our guidance. They want us to tell them and help them with what they need to do when they're unsure. Okay? So, and even do a little demo, like I just did, so that they know. And if they'll, you know, let them practice it. So let's try that. You get the letter opener, get the knife, and let them see what works for them. Okay? It'll just make one less thing for them to have to worry about. I see someone has a question, so I'm just going to finish up these thoughts, and then I'm going to come to you. Looks like 971 area code. So I'll bring you on the line in just a second. Just bear with me. Let's just talk a little bit about the groom's cake. Yeah? The groom's cake is a popular tradition, I think, in the South. I don't think it ever went away. It happens here where I am here in my neck of the woods, but it's not always the first thing when we're talking about cakes. It sort of comes up as an afterthought. So traditionally, the groom's cake, as the name suggests, is for the groom. And usually it's a cake that reflects his personality, either has something to do with his maybe his alma mater or his a hobby or something that makes sense. So if he's into golf, it may be a golf-themed cake. If, you know, based on the school that he went to, it may be the school colors or the school mascot or the school crest. Whatever works for the groom. It's basically a gift from the bride to the groom. Oftentimes it's a surprise. He may not know, one, that there's a groom's cake, or if he knows, he may not know the design of the groom's cake. Tradition has it, folklore has it, that if you, a young lady, sleep with a piece of the groom's cake under your pillow, I think you'll dream of your future husband, not to mention mess up my pillows. But that's supposed to be, I think, what happens. I think that's the superstition is what I'm looking for what happens with the groom's cake. So, again, it can be whimsical. Reggie said that's kind of gross. So, hopefully it's in packaging. Hopefully the groom's cake is packaged before it goes onto one's pillow, right? But that's the history behind it. The groom's cake can be displayed. Where the questions come with the groom's cake is, when should we display it? It can be displayed during the wedding. Why not? But it can also get its own spotlight at the wedding rehearsal dinner, too. Of course, not everybody is invited to the rehearsal dinner, so not everyone's going to see it. But it can have its own spotlight. So if you're unsure, you can suggest that as an option to your clients, too, right? But it can be displayed with the wedding cake or in its own area during the wedding reception. And then it can be, another great idea that I heard about is that you can it's still displayed, but they serve the groom's cake and use that as the wedding favor. So if it's a themed groom's cake, maybe the packaging for the groom's cake also follows that theme. So using that golf example, if it's a golf-themed cake, then maybe the packaging resembles, something to do with golf or the golf ball or the caddy or the golf club or something like that. Can you tell I don't play golf? So that's another thought process, another idea you might want to throw out to your clients. But it can be displayed with a wedding cake, can have its own spotlight, or rehearsal dinner is a really great place for that. With regard to the cakes, and I forgot to mention, after they cut the cake, right, you want to whisk that cake into the kitchen or into the back area. Please do not start cutting the cake in the presence of all the wedding guests. It's a messy thing. It's just something that I think should be behind the scenes. So hopefully your caterer or whoever's doing that knows that. But if for some reason it's a smaller event, and maybe you're doing some of the hands-on stuff or your hands-on tasks, your staff may be responsible for that, for cutting the cake. Not always an easy task, by the way. There's science to that, too. But whisk that in the back. Don't cut the cake in the presence of all the wedding guests. In some instances, your clients may have a fake cake at the bottom. So the idea is that if they're trying to save money, instead of having all the tiers of the cake being real cake, there'll be pretend cake, basically, fake cake. So when they're cutting, and usually the fake cake is at the bottom, so in that instance, they may not cut the bottom. I don't know how fake cake is going to taste. So in that instance, Dawn, and this is a really sort of ties in with what you're saying, although it won't always be the fake cake, they'll cut the real cake layer. And then the idea is that there's a sheet cake, a simple sheet cake in the back, usually decorated with the same colors as the fake cake, and then that is served to the guests. It's a great way to save some money. So in that instance, they wouldn't cut they'd cut whichever layer is the real one. It may be the bottom, but I found usually with a fake cake, it's the upper layers that are the real cakes, is the real cake. Have I totally confused you? But I think it's a really good idea just to do all of that chopping up and cutting up and cake falling, icing and all that. Do all that in the back, okay? Let me just finish up these tips, and then I'm going to come to the person on the phone. Just again, remember the cake is on display for the entire reception. Make sure it can hold up, right? No buttercream if it's hot, and the fondant is a great. Oh, actually, and by the way, fondant actually preserves the cake because of the consistency and what's made out of. A cake covered in fondant can actually stay outside for a couple of days without anything happening to it. It's sort of the fondant actually acts as its own preserver for the cake. Please make sure you place the cake table in a well-lit area. If you have control of the lighting, if it can have some sort of spotlighting, that's great. You want to put it where guests can see it, but please, please don't put the cake too close to the dance floor. We all know why, right? So be cognizant of that when you're thinking where everything is going to go. Make sure the cake is in a prominent spot, but not in a place where it's likely to get knocked over. The person who manages the site will tell you the best place to put the cake if they're doing this all the time. Cake table, I think it was Dawn that mentioned it. Make sure the cake table is decorated nicely. Think about how that cake table is going to look. And make sure in your production day schedule, very, very important, that you make sure that the cake table has been dressed, meaning there's a tablecloth on it before the wedding cake arrives. You don't want the cake arriving and there's no place to put it, or there's a place to put it but the table hasn't been assembled or the tablecloth has not gone onto the table. That has to happen first. Be anal enough to put that on your production day schedule. I would suggest making sure that the cake arrives 2 hours before the start of the reception. So reception that kicks off at 6, that cake should be in place by 4 o'clock. or at least arrive on site by 4 o'clock. Gives that person enough time to assemble it, put it together, and all the rest of that. Okay? Very important. So put that on your production schedule. Put some thought and consideration into how the cake table should be decorated. Think of the linens that will highlight the table and that will match everything else going on in the room, but not take away too much from the cake. Okay? And make sure you find out what that serving piece is, the piece that's going to be at the bottom of the cake. Very important to know what that's going to be. Okay, those are my points that I wanted to cover today for our wedding cakes. I did mention the dessert table, but that, I think, needs its own episode, dessert table and candy buffet. Very popular, but another great way to make the wedding reception sweet. But I'm going to come to the phone line and see what the person with the area code 971 has to say. And let's see. Hello, this is Debbie.
Hi,
oh, Kiki, you're all over the place. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. What's going on?
Well, actually, you mainly answered it. I was just trying to describe in the chat room, and it was just becoming convoluted how to explain it. I had a photographer who was extremely up in arms and very about getting it done exactly the way he wanted to do it. And so he said that the bride stands on the left side of the groom, but she uses her left hand, and she puts her right hand behind his back. His left hand is behind her back, and then she's using her right hand. And so it was like almost like a V, and it was very complicated.
Oh, wow.
And so I was wondering if you'd ever encountered that before, because I can't imagine that that's very easy to cut a cake in that way. I do suggest, you know, if I always do the right hand to the right or the left to the left. I find out if the bride is left-handed or right-handed. That's what I find out, because the groom is mainly just guiding her hand. So I just was wondering what you thought of that.
So saying if she's using her left hand, he should use his left hand. If she's using her right hand, he should use his right hand.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I do. Yeah. I do. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can try it out. I'm sorry. You guys are not hearing Kiki, right? So I've done something. Somehow that's my end. I've done something wrong with the audio. Kiki, they didn't hear your question, so I'm going to repeat it. Kiki is saying
okay. She
had a situation, as I can never explain things the way Kiki does, by the way. She had a wedding where the photographer was very particular about where the bride should stand. So the photographer was saying, I was sort of mimicking this out as you said it, that she should have the knife in her left hand and then place her right hand behind the groom's back, right?
Yes.
Is that what you said, mm-hmm. Right, behind the groom's back. And then the groom should then use his right hand or his left hand, his opposite hand,
his
her
right
left.
Hand. That's
his right
here.
Hand.
It's his right hand
and her
left.
Left to make a V. And I can understand that.
Yes.
I mean, that makes for a nice, that actually might look kind of nice, but I don't know how serious that needs to be. And I think that's really not a bad idea now that I think about it. You know, that might make sense. But
I think it really is. I guess you really have to decide on the sizes of the bride and groom. I mean, for God's sake, I'm 4'10", and my husband is almost 6 foot. There is no way my left hand is coming all the way over to meet his right hand
right.
in the front for a cake. It would be very lopsided.
Okay,
so.
That makes sense. I mean, so, and did he do this at the wedding reception, the photographer who was insisting it be done this way? This is when that sort of came up?
Yeah, it was at the reception.
Yeah, and see, this is something good to go over with the photographer on your production day timeline. It's to sort of say, well, this is what we, I mean, and usually I don't think I've ever had that discussion. So maybe there wasn't really a way to avoid that. But, you know, with the production day timeline, I do go over it with the folks who are normally there. And it's usually if it's a photographer, videographer, and the band person and the caterer. So usually, you know, you might say at 5:30, they're going to cut the cake. And usually that's it. Usually you don't have to say much more, but Kiki seemed like you had a situation with the photographer,
yeah.
Wannabe wedding planner.
It was when I was working as an on-site coordinator, so it was one of those things where I couldn't really talk to him in advance. It was just a spur-of-the-moment thing, which really taught me when the photographer arrives, I walk them around and show them everything so that these kinds of things will come up
yeah.
in conversation in the hopes that they will come up.
Reggie's saying it makes for a nice photo, but not necessarily the actual cutting. Yeah, it really comes down to what the clients are comfortable with. So I would hope that if a photographer felt that way, that he or she would speak up before the reception and do that.
Yeah.
I mean, But if someone sort of jumps in at the middle of the reception and says, you know, one of your vendors that is, and says, well, let's do it that way, just try to downplay it, and you may just have to go along with it for the sake of it and just sort of slap his wrist a little bit at the end and say, yeah, you know, next time maybe we can just sort of discuss that a little differently. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, but good point. And I'm sorry you guys could not hear Kiki. I assure you for the recording, you will hear the wonderful Kiki's voice in all its original glory. So I apologize for that part. All right, great point,
well,
Kiki.
Thank you.
Good hearing from you. Was that your only point?
Yeah, it was my only point.
Okay, thank you, my love. Good. Thank you so much for contributing. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Debbie. We'll talk to you later.
All right, take care. Okay, good point. So I'm sorry you couldn't hear all of what Kiki was saying. That means I did something funky with the audio, and I think I know what it is too. But I'm pretty sure you'll hear it on the replay. Okay, right. So we kind of went just a little over 8 o'clock, but I think we did good today. We covered the basics. Nothing. You know, really spectacular, but just basic stuff. Because with wedding planning, that's how it is. We just have to know the basics and be prepared and be comfortable enough to discuss it with our clients. Okay. You can catch the show replay on confettiradio.com/323. Okay. And of course it's on Blog Talk Radio. You can look for the episode there. We are on Stitcher, Smart Radio, and also on iTunes. All right. I want to thank you for listening to today's show and being a part of it. I really appreciate it. Please remember to post your comments and questions on the episode page. Again, confettiradio.com/323. My name is Debbie Quain. Please join me for our next live broadcast on Tuesday, October 16th. I want to wish you love and success. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Take care.